Our understanding of what health literacy is, though, may vary. It may vary. You may think it's one thing, reading, writing, arithmetic. And there have been many definitions over the years as to what health literacy is. I remember when it first started out, it was a lot more simple in its definition. The Institute of Medicine then came forth. When health literacy sort of became a boom, of course, all the powers that be now jumped on it, like anything else, right? Like Corey, like everything else. However, Institute of Medicine took the pains to really look at the literature and get input and define it. And they defined it as the ability to obtain, process, and understand basic health information and services needed to make appropriate health decisions and follow instructions, the treatment. The problem I have with that is that it emphasizes knowledge. And we'll get into this in a minute, but is health literacy all about knowledge? Yes, it is about knowledge. However, how you attain the knowledge, I think, is very important. Now, who gives another definition that actually is in balance with the Institute of Medicine's, but I don't think it's the end all as well, achieving a level of knowledge, personal skills, and confidence to take action to improve personal and community health by changing personal lifestyles and living conditions. Now, this definition emphasizes behavior and skills acquisition. One of the things that is good about that definition is that it brings up community, but we're focusing on individual health literacy here. So on one hand, you have IOM saying it's about knowledge acquisition and your capability, capacity to attain knowledge. And World Health is saying, well, it also includes behaviors and the skills acquisition. They are both right. They're both right. And just say this, that there's a philosophical school of thought that knowledge can only be attained through experience. And so if we find ways of improving knowledge, certainly we must also find ways of improving the experience in health. And that's an issue, because health literacy is not just about what you know, but how to apply what you know. And you cannot, in my opinion, I agree with Aristotle and his tabla rasa philosophy, blank slate. That is, John Locke, the English philosopher, actually called it a white paper. That is that we're blank until we have experiences, and this is how we learn. That's an empiricist philosophy. But the point is, it's true. It's true. If you didn't have any problem in health, and all of a sudden you didn't feel well and saw your physician, and he told you you had a condition you never heard of, you were a blank slate about that disease or condition before. You had no idea what's going on. Now you're starting to learn about it. There's a first mark. In fact, that's what John Locke referred to it as these marks on white paper, and your knowledge builds. And then your experience with treatment teaches you something else. And then your experience with your family about your health teaches you something else. So health literacy is not just about what you know, and or gaining knowledge through education per se, but also gaining knowledge through experience. So how do we measure health literacy? Anybody know about any measures for health literacy, specifically health literacy? Might have heard of some like the TOFLA. Now there's a problem with them. I have, in all the years in this health literacy domain business, read so many articles on health literacy. I don't agree, of course, with all of them. I agree with some of them. But I'm really concerned when respected journals publish articles that compare measures of health literacy, and they're not even measuring health literacy. These are four examples of new vital sign, and this one is very interesting because it's a clinical assessment, and I give you this paper that has a nutrition label on it, and I'm going to give you about 4 minutes to do these questions. And I ask you questions such as calculating the number of calories that you will not be included in your diet plan if you did this or did that. Not easy. I actually sat there with it and went through it, and I said, whoa, it took me a minute there, and in fact, I probably would have failed it. You know, they now the labels, just everything's compact and you have to start searching for things. So it's not measuring health literacy, it's measuring how well you can negotiate a nutrition label and how good your math skills are. That's the problem. So to say that this is a great test, what it does is it screens people who've had the experience of reading labels as opposed to people who didn't. So it's not measuring health literacy. The realm, you've probably heard about the rapid estimate of adult literacy in medicine, been around for a long time, using clinical situations and in research. They give you a list of words to read. Okay, and at the point at which you cannot pronounce a word correctly, stop, and your score is calculated. Now, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? It's a word recognition test. It's not testing literacy, yet you'll see that. You'll see it used in the context of health literacy. Not even literacy, health literacy. So that's put that test aside. In fact, one more comment on that. People who speak languages or romantic languages, Spanish speakers, you can give them a list of words, and they'll be able to pronounce it, not knowing what it means. So their scores may be spuriously high. And that's a problem with these word recognition tests. I like this one, salsa. Short assessment of health literacy, Spanish-speaking adults. Using clinical assessment. They give you 50 words and ask you for the meaning of the words. Now, is that interesting? You may be able to pronounce all 50 words, but I know what they mean. It's not testing your literacy skills, really. It's not certainly not testing health literacy. And ESTAFLA, which is right now the gold standard for the test of functional health literacy. Now, what does that mean? How about this functional health literacy? Well, ESTAFLA is the gold standard, has been used for years, and you can actually use it. There's a short version. ESTAFLA is a short version of the test of functional health literacy in adults, and they have a Spanish version. And it's a good test to screen people's literacy ability. But it does not really screen for health literacy. What it does is, well, I get into it later because we used it in this study, but it is not a test of health literacy. Okay. So when you read these things, when you read the literature, if it comes your way, when you hear health literacy, take the blinders off and get critical. Be critical thinkers, because it really is not so straightforward. Now, the National Assessment of Adult Literacy, you know, these letters came out different. I have a nice kind of, but it's all right. This survey study was really cool. They went into households and tested people, and they also included items specific to health literacy. Now, if you abide by IOM and WHO's definition, then you'll say, yeah, care of illness, dealing with preventative care, navigating the healthcare system. Now we're getting closer to what health literacy is, based on that analogy I gave you, whether or not you know disease or about it. And it revealed, on the one hand, this is apropos to this study and this presentation, it revealed that average PROS and document literacy scores of Latino-Hispanics declined 18 to 14 points between 92 and 2003. And that's very important in terms of what does it mean to us? What does that mean to us? What does it mean to our country? What does it mean to the healthcare system? We know this. This is a fact. People with good health literacy have better clinical outcomes. That's a fact. People who are literate as opposed to illiterate have better clinical outcomes or better health. So if you have a population of people who will be the majority in this country in the next 50 years who have declining health literacy, declining educational skills, declining health, what's going to happen to the healthcare system? It's not going to survive as we know it today. The burden, the financial burden, would just be too great. So, really, you know, we think about national security. This is an issue of national security. I'm not worried about who's in Europe planning on bombing me. Although I am. Right now, I'm worried about the population, people. Because if they can't get us down, this certainly will get us down in the next generation. And that's scary for me. So what is diabetes health literacy? This is a working definition that we use right now. It's the level of knowledge about diabetes and its prevention. Now, prevention can be primary, secondary, or tertiary. Primary prevention, we don't want you to get ill at all. We give immunizations as a great example of primary prevention. Secondary prevention, I'm going to screen you. Okay, at a certain age, put on mammography at 40, colonoscopy at 50. I'm screening you to find this problem early so that I can do something about it before it gets too far and causes you serious health problems. Tertiary prevention, you have arrived. You have the health problem. Now we have to intercede medically in some way to prevent you from having a lesser quality of life or meeting your demise. The other part of the definition refers to understanding how to translate that knowledge into positive health behaviors and self-management. Note that the World Health Organization uses the word confidence. And that's very important because Bandura, in his work on self-efficacy, basically relates self-efficacy to confidence. I could be comfortable with something, but not have confidence in it. And this, I've gone back and forth with a lot of people in Florida about that. You know, are you comfortable with taking medicine for diabetes? And then the other question, are you confident in how you take the medicine for diabetes? So these are issues that we work on in surveys we're developing. This one survey we use here, it's now in the second level, second version, we're working on that. And that comes to bear. So this underscores knowledge, health behavior, and skills acquisition. So please bear in mind that health literacy is not about whether I can read, write, or do arithmetic. It's about, do I have the information that I need to act upon? And whether or not I act upon that information is another story. That's another conversation. Because if you don't have health insurance, you can't act upon. And in a sense, if you can't access health care, you have arrived to a point in your health literacy improvement and it stops. Until you get that experience with the healthcare system, your health literacy will go no further. So, it's not about, okay, let me give them a book, or let me give her this paper, read it, learn it. It's really much more complicated than that. Knowledge and health literacy, ni id in intellectu, ni si prius fueri in sensu. Latin for, come on, didn't you learn Latin in Fieldston? Oh, I thought you did. Well, it's Latin for nothing in an intellect without first being in the senses. You have to think about it. That's a philosophical, again, empiricist philosophy, that knowledge is gained only or primarily from experience. And back to the Tabula Rasa of Aristotle. Think about it. And there's a truth to it. There's a truth to it. If I can't experience something, how am I going to learn about it? Although it's not so straightforward to try to teach people. You know, if you're newly diagnosed diabetics, you have the typical education sessions with them, you bring them together, and then you get them all kind of pamphlets. And they say they're easy to read pamphlets with little cartoons and, little drawings and illustrations. And this is something we'll talk about, but it's not so straightforward. I'll get to that later.
But the opposite is also true, right? Said, the eye doesn't see what the brain doesn't know.
Yeah. What about animation? Has anybody here not seen a cartoon? See, right there, I gotcha. So if you're familiar with it, then I can use it somehow, right? And when one of the things about animation is that everybody is exposed to it globally, forever, for the last century. Disney really started something, didn't it? And every day you hear about a new animated movie. They use animation on TV. You have it on your cell phones. You go to the bank, you use it. Everywhere you look, animation, everywhere. What has taken people so long to think about using it to teach and to educate and to improve literacy or to improve skills? Well, they have thought about it. Because UNICEF, in the 1960s, started using animation to teach about oral rehydration therapy, nutrition, teenage pregnancy, clean water, sanitation, and HIV/AIDS in Africa, Asia, South America. Now, that was part of my experience with the Caribbean head at UNICEF, I forget his name, and how I learned that. He gave me a book that changed my way of thinking. Because so much work has been done with animation. In World War II, animation was used to teach combat technique, to teach how to use equipment, field artillery. That's very powerful. Why did they do it? Because a lot of the inductees were not good readers. So what, you think a book, this is how you shoot a rifle? No. And so they actually use animation to improve their war literacy, their combat literacy, as it were. And that's very powerful. So it has been used by UNICEF. The United Nations developed, this is not too long ago, about 5 years ago, I think, the Three Amigos, and to teach people using animation all over the world about the use of condoms. It started with Africa, in South Africa. And it's a series of 20 short animated series. It's designed to encourage the use of condoms and stop the spread of HIV. It's a big problem, we know it is. It's still a problem. The machismo amongst Latinos, that they don't want to use a condom, takes my manhood away. The cultural beliefs in Africa and some African nations and tribes where they believe having sex with a younger person will cure AIDS and so they don't use a condom, it's a prevailing problem. And that's a very powerful series. This is one I love because this is the one I learned first about. And Mina addressed poor and differential treatment of adolescent girls in Asia. Many cultures do not value the adolescent girl because they depend on a son to take care of them in their old age. And a girl will be married off. And in fact, it's a burden to have to find someone to marry off your daughter. Many young adolescent girls were abused, killed in many countries. Literally killed because they were a burden. So Mina, they developed Mina, and this became an amazing, amazing event. Mina is a character now in these cultures. She cannot speak back. But she carries a parrot that can. So when she ran into a conflict, and they did these cartoons, animated shorts, and there was this discussion, she could not respond, but the parrot would say something. All she would do is say, shh. You know? But the parrot sent the message. They did an extremely well thought out, comprehensive, qualitative study from several countries over several years on whether or not this made a difference. And they showed that it did. People were starting to appreciate their daughters more. And I'm not sure how they measured that, but it was a qualitative study. And then from that, they proceeded to do comic books. They said, let's just give them this immersion in this idea. So it's very successful. So successful that they started a project similar to that in Africa. And what instead of a parrot, she had a monkey. And they're trying to be culturally competent with that. And you're still in Central Asia, it's parrots. And they worked. So this is not a new concept that we're talking about here. It's more like innovative application of existing technology. You know, so we're not rocket scientists that said, hey, we're the first to do this. Animation and health literacy. Well, this is the project that was funded. We call it Diabetes Health Lamp. Diabetes Health Literacy, Augmentation, and Multicultural Populations. Now, why? Because I can take an animated short, and if I do right by the icons, the characters in the short, I can just transpose different languages. And that's what we did. We started with English and Spanish. And we called it La Casa de Corazón, Lotta Hart's House. So Lotta Hart, L-O-T-T-A, Hart, H-A-R-T, Corazón que late, which means in Spanish, heart that beats. And we basically what happened is I sat down after I saw my daughters and I drew out a woman, okay, a mom, as it were, a grandma, middle-aged woman, with anthropomorphic features that are very typical of Latinas and African-American women. And we sent that drawing to an artist who gave us a better rendition than mine because I'm not an artist. But he got the idea. And from that, we hooked up with animators. And the rest is history, and it really worked well. We also proceeded after this project to do one with breast cancer. And an animated video on breast cancer. that showed that the women actually went for mammography more often, Latinas, immigrant Latinas in South Los Angeles. So animation is really very powerful. What we did is we hooked up with the South Central Family Health Center. They have been wonderful over the years in supporting research that is not typical of the research they were exposed to, but they're really open to new ideas, especially when it came to treating conditions such as diabetes, which they identified as one of the major, major issues for them in South Central Los Angeles. So we basically recruited new patients diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Now, they may have had the diagnosis before. They may have. They may have been told that they had diabetes before, but presenting to this clinic for the first time, they had diabetes, we recruited them. They had no T2D as type 2 diabetes education from the South Central Family Health Center's nurse educator. So that was an inclusion criteria. They may have heard about diabetes, they may have read about diabetes, but at some point you just have to delineate what your inclusion criteria is. And then we randomized them. They were randomized by a promotor, a health navigator, and who the research associate, Marta Navarro, who was, without her, we would not be able to do these studies. She also did the breast cancer study with us. Without Marta and her approach to recruitment, for the breast cancer study, it was going to not only key people in the neighborhood, but actually holding sessions in their homes. Really, and that really was important. Really important. As opposed to saying, come over here to see us. We took it to them. So these were the folks that we picked. We had two groups. It was a randomized controlled trial. That was very important. It was very important to show you have to prove the efficacy of this video. 118 participants to the animated video group. They were the experimental group. 122 received National Institutes of Diabetes and Digestive Diseases and Kidney Diseases. Easy-to-read information. You can find it on the website. Okay, so that's not necessarily what's the gold standard in terms of clinics, but we had to choose something because there's so many renditions of diabetes information, so let's go with NIH. Let's go with NIDDK. So we use their easy-to-read information. But how easy is it? Well, in the terms of readability, it's on the Fernandez-Huerta Spanish readability formula, which I don't know if you're familiar with these formulas, but there's a Flesch-Kincaid index, okay, which is really a good index. And this is basically the index where they don't score by school level because your grade level does not reflect your literacy level. It doesn't. You can be in seventh grade and be reading at third grade level, seventh grade and be reading at 10th grade level. So grade level or educational attainment is not a good measure of literacy. It's a worthless. I mean, by the time you're a graduate student, well, they can read. I think they can read. So it scored 69, which is normal, which is considered standard. Is it easy to read? Is the standard reading easy to read, particularly for our populations with limited literacy, who tend to have grade level reading less than sixth grade? And normal is about seventh grade. So it's still issues. There's still issues with what an IDK is posting. We looked at three information areas: general information about diabetes, glucose intolerance, obesity, signs and symptoms, risk factors, comorbidity, self-management, blood glucose monitoring, nutrition, physical activity, fit care, and clinical management. Visits, ABCs, what we call the ABCs. Okay, the hemoglobin A1C, blood pressure, cholesterol, and treatment. I'm gonna move on because I want to show you the video. And so we developed the Diabetes Health Literacy Survey. It's not a knowledge survey because it has questions about management, questions about applying that management. And we use the S-Toffler as sort of the standard. And the Diabetes Health Literacy Survey basically has 37 items, 16 on general, 6 on self, 5 on clinical. And we also looked at some cultural related questions. We posed those questions. There are a lot of beliefs such as drinking urine can treat diabetes. Okay, really? Or that insulin causes blindness. And these are things that impact treatment, acceptance of treatment. We use categorical response options, and basically the score on the Diabetes Health Literacy Survey simply was the percentage correct. And just quickly, S. Toffler uses the closed method developed in the 50s to test comprehension. And what you do is take a paragraph and you mutilate it. Every fifth, seventh word, take it out. And then give it to someone and say, read it, fill in the blanks. What Parker and Williams did is that they took some hospital information and they mutilated it, but they gave multiple choices. So they tested for 4th grade, 6th grade, and 10th grade. And they scored as inadequate, adequate, or functional health literacy. And these are the score ranges. So the animated video, basically, this is production. I won't get into the details, but it starts with a storyboard. And the storyboard, basically, is just a drawing. And then you do a series, you tell your story in a storyboard before you go on to fill it in and make it look nicer. And the first thing you do is an animatic. And it's animation, but it's sort of like robotic. You know, you don't have a full animation. And that's what we use the animatic to test whether people believed it was any good. And then we went to full production. And this is Corazon. That was a drawing. Over here is my shadow. That was Mom, by the way. I use my mom as my drawing. And this is the one we used the rendition for the video. And this is my daughter, Athena. And this is my first grandchild, Isaiah. And that gave them those names. That I never intended that to happen. So what happened? First of all, we assessed qualitatively whether people were going to accept animation and whether they liked the survey. And I'm going to get into I could do a whole session with qualitative methods, but focus groups, just look for data, right? Get people together. Focus discussion groups, seek qualitative data, but also educate people during the discussion session. Basically, we have to learn to give something when we ask people to participate. And that's been shown to be effective. And we did 5 groups, and these are the questions we asked about the survey. What is the questionnaire about? It would be no good if they couldn't tell me that. And was it easy to read? Was it easy to comprehend? I took pains making sure that it was very easy to read. Now, animated validity. Did they like the animated video, the animatic? They felt it was culturally appropriate. They felt that they understood the information. And we did it with both African Americans and Latinos. It's very important because I'm very big on cross-cultural research and comparing people who live together in the same community. They have similar issues. So they preferred animation over written materials. I went in one focus group, I never forget, I asked them, so what? Tell me about the materials that you use or given to you in the clinic. One kid stood up, the young man, he says, you know what we do that material? He took a piece of paper, he rolled it up. He went, that's what we do with it. And he threw it down. What does that tell you? They don't read it. Okay, let's see. So this is typical of research with minority populations, mostly women, right? Low educational attainment, big family history of diabetes. Look at that, 83% had a history of diabetes, self-reported, poor or fair health, 76 in our sample were Mexicanos, and from El Salvador as well, Guatemala, and incomes were very low, uninsured. I don't even have to put up that slide, do I? The results show that 58% had inadequate functional health literacy, 8% marginal, 34% adequate. That's not a surprise. And for the health literacy survey, only a little more than half of the participants scored. The mean value was 55%. That's pretty low. It still is limited. I can't categorize it for you, but it shows that their knowledge is limited and their experience is limited. And when we looked at the scores, after exposure to the materials, whether it be written material or animated material, they increased significantly more for both groups after exposure. Okay, so you look at 38% had adequate functional health literacy. So in that group, we have people that read well. So when you look at means, you know, it's going to even out. And so what does that mean for us? Well, it was a little more for the experimental group. But when you adjust for baseline scores, gender, age, insurance, it was significant improvement in the experimental versus the control group. And it gets even better because, for me, this was more important, is that people who scored at the lowest tier of TOPLA scoring, categorically, benefited the most from animation. And there was a significant difference. Okay, so those who scored less on the TOPLA, the inadequate level, in the control group and the experimental group, those who scored at the lowest in TOPLA, whoever saw the animated video benefited the most. And we have a population with inadequate health literacy. Inadequate literacy. So animation has the potential to improve the health literacy of people who cannot read. And then, well, you don't have to read an icon. So it really does have good potential. The survey is valid. The face validity of the survey is valid. I mean, we don't have enough information right now to say whether or not it had... it showed a good correlation with the S-TOPLA in terms of construct validity, but we not yet have tested it further to see whether or not it's reliable, and that's coming. So we also need to test the English version of the video because we only checked the Spanish version, and on that note, I want to play the video for you so you can comment on it, okay? How do we do?
Let's see if it's still here. Let's hope it plays.
You want it in Spanish or English?
Okay. Let's see if it comes up in that.
Then you'll see that the whole idea was for Corazón, Lara, to be empathetic and welcome you. You know, it's worth, we really... We're trying to make it realistic, okay. Is it volume?
Welcome to my home. My name is Lotta Hart. Please, come in. There's much to talk about. I know why you are here today. Your doctor told you that you have diabetes, or you found out that someone important to you has diabetes. No one is ever ready to hear this. You may be feeling worried or sad or angry. You may not want to admit to having diabetes or not want to think about it. Don't worry. Those are perfectly normal emotions to have. Did you know that I also have diabetes? Yes, for 10 years now. I'm sure you have 1,000 questions about diabetes. Why do I have diabetes? What harm can this disease do to me? How can I take care of myself? Which food should I avoid? How do I check my blood sugar level? I remember asking the same questions. When I learned I had diabetes, I was surprised and scared. Why me? Then, when I learned diabetes could be treated and controlled, I stopped being worried and scared. It's good to learn as much as you can about how to manage your diabetes. Preparing healthy foods, exercising, taking medicines, and visiting my doctor regularly, these are things I do to stay healthy and happy. Now then, what is diabetes? Let's see. When we eat, our bodies turn some foods into sugar. This sugar enters into our blood and is carried to all parts of our body. Our body then uses the sugar to provide us with energy. We all have sugar in our blood, but too much sugar in our blood can cause health problems. This is what diabetes is. We have an organ called the pancreas. It's near our stomach. The pancreas makes insulin. Insulin helps our body use the sugar we eat. Without insulin, the sugar builds up in our blood. This condition is called diabetes. Insulin acts like a bridge. It allows sugar to cross from our blood into our bodies. Imagine if traffic had to stop on a road because a bridge couldn't be crossed. Cars wanting to cross will have to wait. As more and more cars come to cross, things would get crowded. Like a bridge, insulin keeps sugar traffic moving from our blood into our bodies. This way, insulin helps keep normal amounts of sugar in our blood. If our body doesn't make enough insulin, then more and more sugar builds in our blood. The blood then gets crowded with sugar. Like traffic, this can cause accidents. But in this case, the accidents damage our eyes, heart, kidneys, and feet. Did you know there are two types of diabetes? Yes, type 1 and type 2. People with type 1 diabetes are usually children. Their body doesn't make insulin. But 90% of people with diabetes have type 2, like us. Diabetes type 2 develops when we get older. We make insulin, but not enough. In the US, 20 million people know they have type 2 diabetes. Millions of others have this condition, but don't know it. Why? Because they have symptoms that don't seem harmful. They don't realize the symptoms come from diabetes. For example, feeling more tired than usual, getting thirsty and hungry more often, urinating more than usual, especially at night, having blurred vision and cuts that don't heal like before, all can be symptoms of diabetes. Diabetes is a condition that will be with you for the rest of your life. Even so, you can find a way to manage your diabetes in a way that works for you. With the support of your friends, family, doctor, and other health professionals, you can enjoy a healthy life with diabetes. It's true! Taking good care of yourself will help you feel better and avoid the problems that diabetes can cause. It's a good idea to take diabetes seriously. Diabetes affects almost every part of the body. Without caring for your health, diabetes can cause strokes, eye disease, and possible blindness. Diabetes can damage nerves and cause numbness to your hands and feet. If that happens, you won't feel cuts and bruises. That may cause you to lose a foot or leg. Also, diabetes can lead to kidney problems, and even gum disease that causes you to lose teeth. Being overweight, being inactive, not eating a balanced diet, and smoking, these are things that cause blood circulation problems and heart disease. They are also things that increase the damage that diabetes can do to your body. Exercising is very important to manage your diabetes and for staying healthy. You don't have to join a fitness club. Just walking 30 minutes 5 days a week will help you to lose weight, improve your blood circulation, and lower your risk of heart disease. It's also important to have a balanced diet. You should avoid sweets, fatty foods like those that are fried, salty foods, and fast foods. I know, this could be very hard, but foods that are high in fiber are good, like vegetables, grains, nuts, beans, and fruits. And they'll help you to stay healthy. These foods can also help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. These two conditions can complicate your diabetes. Let's learn the ABCs of controlling diabetes. A is for A1C, a blood test that is done in the clinic. B is for blood pressure. And C is for cholesterol check. A1C, blood pressure, and cholesterol check. Repeat them. A1C, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Excellent! Always remember these three things when visiting your doctor. This will help you manage your diabetes. Let's start with A. A1C. The A1C blood test informs your doctor how good your blood sugar has been controlled for the past 3 months. It should be checked at least 2 times a year. Remember, high blood sugar can damage your eyes, kidneys, and the feet. Now let's go to B, blood pressure. Having your blood pressure checked is also very important. High blood pressure can cause the heart to work very hard. This can cause heart attacks, strokes, and kidney disease. High blood pressure can cause the same conditions that diabetes does. Having diabetes and high blood pressure is very, very dangerous. This is why it is important to have your blood pressure checked. Finally, we go to C, cholesterol. High cholesterol can cause cholesterol to build up in the blood so much that it blocks blood vessels. Like diabetes and high blood pressure, high cholesterol can cause heart attacks and strokes. Now, Imagine having these three conditions and not treating them. Treatment can be simple. For example, taking one aspirin a day can help prevent heart attacks. Ask your doctor if you can take aspirin. For these reasons, it's important that you visit your doctors for regular checkups. Taking medicine recommended by your doctor will help you to stay healthy. It's important to let your doctor know right away if you notice any changes in your condition. Early treatment can prevent problems with your heart, eyes, teeth, kidneys, and feet. Speaking of feet, you or someone at home should be checking your feet each day. Look for cuts, blisters, calluses, red spots, and swelling. Call your doctor or nurse about any cuts that won't heal. Did you know that diabetes is the leading cause of blindness in adults in the United States? That is why you should have your eyes examined every year. Also, twice a year, your urine should be checked for protein. Why? Because protein in the urine can be a sign that diabetes or high blood pressure is damaging your kidneys. One more thing. Because we have diabetes, we should have a flu shot every year. Ask your doctor about getting your flu shot in the fall every year. The diabetes ABCs, feet checks, eye exams, urine tests, and flu shots. There's a lot to know about diabetes. How can anyone remember all of this? Let me show you how I do it. I use a diabetes health record like this one. You can get one at the clinic when you see your doctor. It will help you keep track of your appointments and to remember when it's time for checkups and blood and urine tests. I take pills to control my blood sugar level. I also take insulin injections. My doctor told me that 1 in 5 people with type 2 diabetes needs insulin injections to control their blood sugar level. I measure my blood sugar level twice a day, once in the morning before I eat, and a second time before dinner. This is a blood sugar monitor. It is a tool that helps me plan my day's activities and my diet. The monitor is not meant to replace regular exams. I still visit my doctor every 3 to 4 months to better manage my diabetes. You may not feel well if you have too much sugar in the blood, but having too little sugar can also be a problem. Sometimes diabetes medicine can lower the blood sugar too much. This is called hypoglycemia. If you feel dizzy, shaky, sweaty, fast heartbeats, or very hungry, it's possible that your blood sugar may be too low. Drinking a glass of orange juice or half a glass of milk can help. If this happens, let your doctor know during your next visit with them. I know I've said a lot about diabetes. Don't worry. It would be my pleasure to chat with you again whenever you'd like to visit me. Remember, the more you know about diabetes, the easier it is to control your blood sugar and manage your day to live a normal life. People with diabetes have been Olympic athletes, famous entertainers, and world leaders. With a little planning and regular checkups, diabetes should not prevent you from enjoying your work, your family, and your life. Diabetes is a condition that will be with you for the rest of your life. Accepting this is the first step toward managing your diabetes. Remember your diabetes ABCs: A1C blood test, blood pressure check, and cholesterol check. See your doctor regularly for these checkups and for urine tests and eye exams. Don't forget your feet. They are very important. In the following months and years, you will meet many people who are part of the medical team that will help you control your diabetes and prevent problems. Doctors, nurses, nutrition specialists, feet and eye specialists are some. Also, your family's support is important. But the most important member of your team is you. Take charge of your health. Visit your doctor and take the lead in the treatment and control of your diabetes. Don't be afraid to ask questions about what worries you and what you need. Managing your diabetes is a day-to-day goal. Come and visit me soon, and we can talk again. Until then, take charge and take care. The ABCs of diabetes will keep you healthy and strong. See your doctor and check your feet. Take charge and you can't go wrong.
Well, one of the things that you may note immediately that we need a new rendition because things have changed, right? Monitors don't look like that. There's a lot more people with diabetes. And you'll also note that we reinforce the message throughout. It's sort of, and when she says come back, the power of this, we gave all the participants a copy of this and asked them to share it with their family. Keep, bear in mind that we tested them immediately within an hour after they saw the video and within an hour after they read this information from NIDDK. And there was some improvement, particularly for those, again, at the lowest tier of functional health literacy. Now imagine if they would take our advice and take this home, and many did, because we tested them at 2 weeks. And all the participants had significantly improved. Now, was it because of this? We can't prove that, because we did not ask that. We should have. But I'll tell you this, that it's implicit. I mean, there was nothing else that was different. They still had not seen the diabetes educator. Okay, so the other thing about animation is it has a long shelf life. Perhaps not with health as much as others. By that I mean the information has changed, but some of it is consistent. What it does to your eyes, your kidneys, your heart, the ABCs are pretty much the same. We don't need to get into the specifics of high density versus low density lipoproteins and what they mean, triglycerides, because if they just remember cholesterol check and mention it, then that will be done. So we are actually poised to submit a grant to get funding to do a series. This is a lot of information. So to have chapters for every area and just sort of like a little volume where people can just take it home, share with their family, share with their friends. It's a sort of herd immunity of health literacy, where I just give information to a few and then they spread it out to many. So that's the goal of Health Lab. And not only with diabetes, but we're going to move forward with other chronic diseases. You know, kidney disease is a huge area that needs to be looked at. you know, Dr. Baker, the ophthalmologist. So we're all involved in this. It's interdisciplinary. It's not about physicians. It really is about the people. How can we reach the people to take care of themselves? We shot 100 copies to give them out.
Any question?
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry. It's a great project. I mean, thank you. In so many ways, we've highlighted all of them. The way you designed it, it's kind of repetition and kind of laying it all out there. To kind of start letting them process and going through the reality. Can you talk about like your process in developing the, whether, you know, kind of writing the script or kind of, or is it just from basic, from experience and just kind of using that as a story, or was just the thought process and even kind of that as well as trying to convey it to funders, you know, how do you convince the funders that this is going to be, you know, like a high quality commercial? I mean, you already have done it, so it's...
No, it's really important. I'm glad you brought that quality score, because animation is very expensive. Mm-hmm. We had a limited budget and in doing this, and we were very fortunate that we had a young man named Greg Singer. Greg Singer, I met through Women in Animation. They referred him to me because he was a young man who was interested in health and animation, and they said, wait a minute, you need to meet José Calderón. And he came and we visited and we became fast friends. He has a master's in fine arts and he was the one that did most of the production. Scripting, it's a tough thing. What do we include? I mean, that's what you're asking about, the scripts. And that's why we limited it to that. Because you know there's so much more involved, much more involved. And that's why the next step is getting the money to do a more quality. Well, the video for breast cancer, if I had time to show it to you, you'd see the quality difference. So it was really amazing. But it's a very expensive venture. But the thing is, it has a long shelf life. You know, if you do a good animated series, you can use it over and over and over. Scripts, we sat down with people from the community, with Malta, who brought people to us, with the nurse diabetes educator, and we developed the script. And then we did the video. Before we went to final production, we showed it to a diabetologist, Mary Davidson. Okay. He reviewed it. Mary Davidson is an expert in diabetes. And he pointed out some very important issues about this video. And we went back to the animatic and fixed it. It's a tough call. I've learned a lot about animation from the experience. You might note that this is 2005. That's 8 years ago. So is this still valuable today? 8 years later, it is. It still has to be changed. I mean, look at the animation that's being done today. So if people are exposed to that level of animation, do we have to go to Pixar level? I kind of think that if somebody showed you that 2-3D animation that, like in the video games, it may be too weird. But we grew up watching the very simple Mickey Mouse stuff. Well, maybe not our kids. Certainly not my grandchildren. But I guess, am I answering your question, first of all? I struggled with that. I struggled, what do we include? How do we present it? Clearly, it had to be somebody they can empathize with. And who does not empathize with mom? I mean, I didn't think about that, honestly. You know, and I did not think about the doctor. Because the doctor has not worked. I spent a lot of time in practice taking people off meds and sitting down with people about their conditions. And I was criticized for that. I wasn't generating enough capital for the groups. And I'm so glad I'm now an academician, because I have to worry about the pressure to generate dollars for a group. And if I do this again, I don't want to get paid for it. I'll stick with academia, and I stick with Health Lab. I will stick with Health Lab. I like it. You know the potential for this? I could use this. One of the things we've been really going back and forth about is applying animation to surveys and gaining quantitative data that way. And how can I then use that when you're in the clinic? I'll give you an iPad with some animation to teach you, and where you can touch screen responses to questions. And you can even pick an icon that you relate to. You know, and that would be something that if it became regular in the clinic, that information in real time can be sent to your doctor to let him know, well, what isn't working? What don't they know? How much time do you spend with your physician?
10 minutes.
Are they going to be able to tell you all of this in 10 minutes? This is a 13-minute video. So imagine if he can identify what you need to know, where the gaps are, and use those 10 minutes to fill the gaps. So there's a lot of ways we can use animation and animation production. We're working on it.
So I have comments and questions. So one of my questions is around any feedback that you receive from the participants. I'm actually a project manager for an ECLA project for medical cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. And along the way, it's a community-based project, so along the way we had to tweak a lot of things based on the participants' feedback about some of the barriers to meeting some of the recommendations that we were having. Did you have any sort of feedback as to what are some of the reasons that they might not be able to eat healthy, they might not get, you know, checked, they're not...
I'm sorry, what's the question? The last part you asked?
Oh.
Feedback about what?
About why they wouldn't be able to do some of the recommendations, or what are some of their specific life stories.
Oh, great. See that? I got it, though. Reflex. The life stories that went into the video, or other people's experiences, people, and does this
feedback as to, like, oh, you know, this is great. I you know,
what we did? Yeah, that's an important question. I didn't get into it, but we did a qualitative study within the study. And we actually took pains to ensure that people perceived it as being linguistically appropriate to them, culturally appropriate to them. We went as far as with the Latino focused discussion groups to ask them, are we using the language appropriately for you?
Joe, I think she's kind of asking another question, but to what you talked about before, the barriers to self-efficacy.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's been a long 3 days,
right.
I'm sorry.
Right, is that
yeah.
Barriers to self-efficacy, the whole confidence issue?
Right, because you're talking about potentially developing a series, which would be, you know, great, and addressing some of the...
You know, the whole issue of self-efficacy, when I ask you, well, the survey did ask questions, not about self-efficacy per se, but the new rendition does ask that. What does it mean to you? What is their experience? I can teach them how to manage their diabetes, but do they feel confident managing their diabetes? That's an important problem. I can measure it to some extent, But I don't think you could teach someone to be confident. But we know this, that as their self-management skills improve and as their condition improves, they do build confidence. It's going to vary from person to person, family to family. You're right. It really comes down to personal experiences and family experiences. So tell me, your project, is that an issue for the Holy Spirit's confidence? And
well, the first idea of the project was to make sure we solidified their knowledge about, you know, cardiovascular disease, and that worked okay. Great. But they turned around and they said, you know, your intervention is great. I get it. I mean, there's been several projects that come to our community to do this. But the reality is that, you know, the policies with the county are not really all that great in making sure we have availability of fruits and vegetables. We call East LA a desert, but it's really a swamp of bad food. You know, I have all these other issues with, you know, multiple jobs, multiple children, competing.
I don't have time to exercise. I don't.
Right. So, I mean, this is great, and I get it, and I can, you know, complete a survey saying that I understand.
How do I translate this
into
action? That's another study, in fact, and that study needs to be done. Right now we're concentrating on improving people's understanding of their condition, because without that we can't take it any further. That really is the baseline. How do we get people to improve their physical activity? By not using the word exercise, for one. I don't use the word exercise anymore. Physical activity, caminando, you know, that means something simple. How do I get them to monitor? You know how much those strips cost now? How many people would rather buy food for their kids than test their blood sugars? That's an issue. Even I don't have the co-payment and have a few dollars, should I go see my doctor? I'm saying you have to see a doctor, you have to get an eye checkup, you have to check your urines. Well, that's really about social determinants of health.
Right.
But we do still know, this is a fact, that if I can improve your health literacy, and in fact, using animation, we refer to it as edutainment. If I can entertain you, I can educate you. So for me, having had the experience of seeing patients and struggling with this in New York, for me, teaching them, somehow improving their health literacy, for me is step one. How many people know somebody that don't know the medicines they're on? That have been on medicines, they just don't know what it is? Mom! Weekly, I check in on her. They gave me a new drug. So that's an issue. And, well, she has the benefit of Joe to call and explain it to her. But I understand what you're saying. That's all nice and well, and I might get that R01 to do a better study. But is it going to make a difference?
I was just curious if they went over and above, because for me, as you know, project manager, I was actually shocked that a lot of the people were so articulate and objective in their feedback to us, not as part of their of our measures, but we do in-home interventions as well.
It's a reality check.
You're not asking me this, but let me tell you.
It's a reality check. We can spend billions of dollars on interventions and health disparities, but those health disparities are still here. In fact, I have to say this, most of the people who suffer from the disparities are minorities, but consider all poor, whether they're white, black, Latino, and most of the poor in this country are non-Hispanic whites. And we need to do things like this to include them as well. But I can't answer all of your questions about that. I just feel strongly that from my personal experience as a professional and at home, as a father of a type 1 diabetic who's 17, that, and she's been rough. Teenagers, diabetes, type 1, are really tough to deal with. You know, they're going to want to do everything else that the kids do. Like, even at home, I have trouble with that. But we have to start somewhere. You know, I understand your critique, and I think it's well taken. And keep that in mind, because you're critically thinking this. And that's not saying, well, Calderon said this works, and it's a good thing. It does work, and it is a good thing. But it may not work for everybody.
No, more than a critique, I think it was just me being curious about the kind of feedback that the population you work with, if they were eager to really...
You know, that's a good thought, because I've shown this all over the place in conferences over the years and always got good feedback. The breast cancer one was really, really well accepted. Wish I could do that one for you. But we did meet with people from the community in these focus discussion groups. These were people recruited not from the hospital, but from Mount Nicholson Gardens and places like that, and they were honest about it. For one, Corazon Que Late's hands were kind of sharp in the animatic. You know, we hadn't done final production, and they critiqued that all across. Oh, her hands are scary. So we made sure that her hands looked a little more mom-like, you know, whatever that means. But no, we took great pains to get their opinion about the language. Does she strike you as somebody who, how about the kid? How about her daughter? I mean, just, do they need to be in there? No, we did take pains, okay? And we did it with African Americans and got similar responses from men and women from both African American and immigrant Latinos. So, and I think that suffices for me. If I can sell it to them, who are hard to sell, but did they go home and use the information? They got the video. Well, I know they used it because we did 2-week posts, and I stand by that. That helped improve their health literacy. But did they act upon it?
Right.
I have no idea.
What happened to their A1C? Yeah. Yeah. Blood pressure,
Cholesterol
level. That's the next
grain. Well, you hearing about that? For sure.
I like what you brought up. I really do. I mean, it's important for all of us in research and even in practice that what we do, it works in a really controlled environment. You look at this as clinic. It's a controlled environment. Will it work in reality? And so that's step two for us. Taking this, doing another rendition in chapters, putting it on iPads, on touchscreen iPads, so that it's more accessible. Most people are familiar with touchscreen, with animation. And so when I finish that in 5 years, I'll come back and I'll talk to you. Yes?
I just have a couple of quick comments. I come at this from a librarian perspective. I'm a consumer health librarian at the Biomed Library. Cool. And so I have an interest in health literacy and materials, you know, that can be understood at lower reading levels. So a couple of things. You're breaking it into the chapters is an excellent plan because people will need segmented information and be able to go back and review the parts that they need more. So that's perfect. The other thing that I think is missing from this one, which is kind of what you alluded mm-hmm. to, is why do I care? If I were the person listening, like why? Yeah, if the barrier is the $20 copay and needing to pay for food for the kids instead, there's a bigger thing down the line, which is these things are done now, what is that emergency going to look like later? You know, when all of a sudden you're in the hospital for 3 weeks, how are you going to take care of the kid then? And so if you can somehow weave in that, why do I care? And, you know, and what does it really mean for me longer term, rather than just looking at my
That's really, really, thank you for that, because the survey asks questions about culture. And clearly, one of the chapters that we have to include is about cultural perceptions about diabetes. And the other one is, this is outside, this is at home, this is ambulatory. Thank you for that, because I hadn't thought about doing a chapter on hospitalization. So you just added a chapter to this whole thing. Yeah, you did. And that's going to be an interesting one. How does the family feel about the house? How did we feel when my daughter was in a coma? Because she didn't tell us she hadn't taken her insulin. And it had a tremendous impact on me. My feelings were all over the place, man. Here I am with an NZ. You know, I've treated this so many years, I can't even treat my own daughter. I had very personal things happened to me about it that changed my perspective on how I deal with my daughter. So that's great. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I'm definitely going to, you know, put that in there somewhere for sure. Thanks. Rick?
So would you recommend just thinking about, are you saying that perhaps it should be individuals in the animation that have the complication, which is kind of, it could be kind of disturbing, but it could be impactful.
So.
You know, that's kind of, you know.
There may be ways of doing it, like just the person thinking farther ahead, or you know, if maybe have it be a scenario where the doctor has said that these are complications that can happen if you don't manage it now. So it's important to learn how to manage it. I'm not sure.
Absolutely. In fact, should we include an amputee, somebody who's blind?
Sure, right. Sure. Yeah. Exactly.
That's exactly the kind of thing. And specifically, since this is animation, you know, sometimes in animation you get the bubble.
Yes.
Where the person is thinking about something or an idea pops into their head, and maybe you can use that kind of thing to just show someone, like maybe who's hooked up to an IV or something along those lines, because you have to be really careful. I remember when the, I think it was the Lung Association came out with the commercials about smoking, and they were very disturbing.
Yes.
And it would be a turnoff if you went that far. But maybe the idea of putting that little bubble out there that says, oh my God, well, what about my aunt who wound up in the hospital and she was on this IV?
Well, you know, glad to help.
Just going back to, so, but when you're looking at it, you know, and you can think theoretically, and first of all, I go back to prevention is a middle class concept.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? This
absolutely.
Whole future thing, right?
Yeah.
So if you're sitting there, and it really is, if you're sitting there, and part of what you're thinking about is, I'm going to pay the rent. It's the 17th. I need to find money between now and the 31st.
Sure, absolutely.
Or I might be out on the street. Right?
Absolutely.
You really have to have something very powerful to say.
That's a lot. That may be said. Let me just say that what you see here then was this woman very empathizing. What we did in the breast cancer video, though, was more interactive, more than one character. Three women thought. Corazón que late is the icon with her daughter and a friend at a table, at a dinner table. They're talking, and so it's more like a real family situation. So we did go that route because we did learn that lesson. But what I'm hearing is really powerful because it might take 20 chapters. You know, how do we so much information? We could do one just on kidney disease, one on eye disease, one on amputations. How do people with diabetes deal with amputation? And that's powerful. And the hospitalization part is good. I think that's important. But we have thought about doing one just for kidney disease, and what that means, dialysis. What does that mean? What does it mean to me and my family?
The other thing is, if you go into more detail, as you were just suggesting. Are these the kinds of things that might be put into clinic waiting rooms? We spend a lot of time in waiting rooms, you know, especially as doctors get further and further behind as the population grows and there are more patients to be seen. That's another opportunity where you're sitting there and you can run these videos and they can go into more detail. It might even make you think, so you're about to head into the doctor's room and these things are up on the display. So that might be another opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. This is great. Thank you.
You're way out of touch.
Oh yeah, I gotta catch up.
You can do these, of course, in segments, and I'm sure you already did that. So this is, like you said, knowledge is sort of essential first, but then you can say, oh, here's some challenges that you might face. Here you go. You want to choose good food, and it's going to cost cheaper to go to McDonald's.
Absolutely.
So you have people in the scenario and say, well, what happens to these people? They keep picking this way. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they have some complications.
Mm-hmm. Then the other thing good about this, thanks for that, Ron, is this can be used by a family animation. You can share it with your kids. You know, and so it is family-oriented animation. But thanks for all the comments, because it really is helpful for me to hear this. I mean, it's not the end all, this video. This was our first experiment. Clearly we need more. That survey has to be further developed. We have further developed the icon, but the whole story needs further development. So I appreciate the time and to be here. And actually, I'm walking away more probably now. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate
that. You may also want to consider, you mentioned iPad, but using an app format.
Absolutely, that's on the table.
Yeah.
You know, an app for cell phones. And in fact, a lot of people are using texting to remind people with diabetes it's time to check your blood sugar and things like that. So that's apps, definitely thinking about that.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.